there's some great footage out there that shows you in infrared what the bees see. And then when you look at flowers, you see them in a whole new light.
This is Costa Georgiadis. And you might know Costa from Gardening Australia on ABC or recognise him because of his big bushy beard. Costa is a landscape architect by trade, but by passion, he loves all things plants and all things bees. And right now, he's talking about what happens when a bee pollinates a flower.
You can understand why they don't miss, because this is like one infrared dance party and you've just opened the door and there's like the full tilt light show and just gone, I'm in there. Right? And they go into the flower and just like they are bouncing off the walls. They're going for the party, the after party, and the next day, you know, they're still going. Bouncing around off the walls, they get covered and then they fly off. Bees do an incredible, incredible amount of work that for us as humans, even when I say to people, oh, you know, you haven't had enough bees in your garden, go and pollinate with a brush your passion fruits or your pumpkins. I mean, it takes time, you know, and you've got to go there and you've got to get the pollen off and rub it in the right places. One, two, three.
And how do you pollinate them yourselves? What do you use? What do you put
on
there?
Oh, you can get a little brush and then basically you just have to get the pollen from one point and rub it on the other point of the plant and mix it around. But that's the thing that bees do. I mean, they do it, you know, they just have a sign on there, will work for pollen and nectar. You know, that's their gig. Whereas for us to do it, we've got to put a lot of time in. And like, there's no way that it can be done on huge orchards and huge farms. And that's where you actually see bees get transported to pollinate crops, you know, big orchards. You know, they'll go there and do nut farms and fruit farms. They'll put them out there and they'll go and do the job for us.
And you say transported as in people are physically driving out these bees out there?
Yeah. They take the boxes.
Really?
They put them on trucks. There's bees that just move around with the seasons and they're hired. They're like, for the farmers, it's basically dollars and cents, because if they get more flowers pollinated, that's extra fruit on that tree and that's extra dollars.
As well as being extra dollars for the farmers, the fact that bees are hugely responsible in pollinating crops is a big deal for all of us. Tomatoes, apples, pears, potatoes, broccoli, cauliflower, cabbage, watermelon, cucumber, you literally name anything you can find in the grocer, and there's a good chance that it's had a meet and greet with a pollinating bee at some point. But recently, things haven't been looking good for bee populations. Pesticide use, changes in climate conditions, and destruction of habitats are just some of the strains affecting bee populations around the globe. In January this year, the United States listed its first ever endangered bee species, the rusty-patched bumblebee. Now, the stresses I've just mentioned are posing some serious threats, but there's something else that's really throwing some bees into a tailspin, and it's a little mite called a varroa mite.
Varroa mite is a mite that gets into the beehive and basically they eat the larvae and or they lay their eggs in there, which then eat the larvae of the about to hatch bees and wipes out the colony. And they call it colony collapse disorder.
It's not so much the mite that kills the bees, but it acts as a vector of a large number of honeybee viruses.
This is Madeline Beekman, professor in behavioural ecology from the University of Sydney. Madeline says it's the honeybee that's being worst affected by the transmission of certain viruses.
And it's one of those viruses in particular, and that's called deformed wing virus, because the bees that emerge with a heavy infection of deformed wing virus have deformed wings. And it's becoming more and more clear that for some reason, the presence of this mite selects for highly virulent strains of that particular virus, the deformed wing virus. So that is basically killing bees across the globe.
Varroa mites aren't necessarily a new mite. In fact, in certain places around the world, they've lived alongside bee populations. But the reason they're attacking certain honeybees now more so than before, well, one reason is because of beekeepers.
It's not a new mite. It originates from a close relative of the honeybee, and that's Apis arana, the Asian hive bee. The Asian hive bee and the Western hive bee are normally separated, but beekeepers do all these weird things. They like moving their hives around because they follow honey flows, etc. And also in the 80s, there was this misconceived idea that we could help people in Southeast Asia increase their honey production if they would just have a proper bee, in other words, the Western honeybee. So a lot of extension workers introduced the European honeybee or the Western honeybee into Southeast Asia and encourage people to keep the Western honeybee. And then it turned out that this mite heavily lives on Apis arana, the Asian honeybee, where it does no harm, that jumped onto the Western honeybee. And because the bee and the mite haven't co-evolved for a long time, basically mismatched. So the parasite has become a serious issue because it increases in numbers really quickly in the European or the Western honeybee colonies.
Fortunately enough for our bees, the Varroa mite is not found here in Australia. So they've remained relatively unscathed from all the other dangers that bees in other countries are facing. But that could soon change. Back to Costa.
Australian bees have been so pristine up until now that many bees get sent over to the US to help with pollinating. But unfortunately, I wouldn't want to be one of those bees because your chances of returning because of the problems over there, probably a bit slim.
Right, yeah. So the ones that they're taking to the US, are they native bees?
Like no, they're honeybees.
What's the difference? Because I feel like there are a number of different types of bees, but I can't differentiate them.
No, you're right on. So your classic honeybee, you go down to the markets or to the shop and you buy some honey. Most of that has been created by the European honeybee. They're colony bees. They produce a large amount of honey. The Australian native bee, there's many of them, lots and lots of them. There's upward of, I'll just say, 1,500 different Australian native bees.
Wow.
And most of them are loners. They're just individuals that go out and live and they don't congregate in a colony. But there is one variety that does. And that variety is a variety that we can put into community gardens, because the one thing with the Australian native bees is that they don't sting.
Putting native bees into community gardens is exactly what Costa is doing. Costa is championing the Bee B&B Hotel Initiative, which has already seen 40 bee hotels installed into schools, which essentially are just that, little hotels or homes for native bees to come and live in. And like he said, the natives don't sting. But like other bee species, the honeybee and bumblebee, native bees still pollinate, so they're an important population to keep alive.
If we want bees, we need a food source. Now, the food source is flowers. And I said to them, well, when do we get flowers? And actually, the kids were pretty good. They mixed it up a bit. But a lot of times when I ask adults, I go, oh, you get flowers in spring. And I go, yeah, but then after that, the bees need food. You don't just eat in spring. So what getting involved with the native bees and developing bug hotels, what doing that does is actually get you thinking about what have I got flowering in my garden now? And then what about from April till June? And then what's going to be flowering in the midst of winter? And so it gives you a really nice opportunity to sit back and say, well, if I want these bees, I've got to provide for them. I said this to the kids in the class today. I said, now this reminds me of a saying. And I said, repeat this after me. Build it and they will come, when we were talking about the bug hotel. And they said, build it and they will come. And I thought, that's it. Plant it and they will be there. And, you know, here you have, just here at the TAFE, on the middle of Harris Street, busy built environment, asphalt paved area with concrete steps. There was nothing there. And now this little corner has become a garden and the birds are coming in there, the bees, the native bees, all these different elements of the microbiology so that, you know, we're rebuilding an ecosystem.